Hi there, I'm Wendy Carlisle. In that sprawling metropolis between Brisbane and the Gold Coast called Logan, the impact of federal budget cuts on vital community services is now starting to hit home. But Logan is a remarkable place. A popular destination for arriving refugees, it's home to 217 different ethnic groups. A city with a big heart and plenty of fight. Melanie Christensen has this report.
If I had have kept going downhill, if I hadn't have got up out of bed and found this program, it would have worked out a hell of a lot differently. I'm pretty sure, to tell you the truth, and I don't want to be so morbid in saying this, but I honestly think I would have given up by now, because life gets too hard and it's just overwhelming, especially when you've got mental health issues.
The program that helped Danielle, more than anything else, she says, was a life skill course for parents offered at a local neighbourhood centre in Logan, just down the highway from Brisbane. But that program has now lost its federal funding.
What's your name, loving? Have you been to us before? Okay, you can come in and see us.
Further down the Pacific Highway, about 15 minutes drive away, is the Beenleigh Catholic Care and Concern Centre. It's been providing emergency relief, mainly grocery and petrol vouchers, to people in urgent need for 33 years. Now it too has lost its federal funding, and when the vouchers run out and the doors close for good, manager Anne Campsie says finding help will be a lot harder for some people who really need it.
I mean, the people who come in to me are desperate. Like the lady out there, she's desperate. And I mean, where are they going to go?
These are just two of more than 1,000 community sector organisations who lost some or all of their federal funding in decisions that go back to Joe Hockey's infamous 2014 budget.
Unless we fix this budget together, we will leave the next generation with a legacy of debt, not a legacy of opportunity. We are a nation of lifters, not leaners.
Between that lifters not leaners budget and the mid-year economic statement that followed, funding to community sector groups was cut by $270 million, a situation compounded by the introduction of a new tender process for community sector grants, officially called a new way of working for grants. A new way with a terrible impact, according to Labor Senator Claire Moore.
We had a very chaotic process with this round of grants. The most needy, the most vulnerable, and also the people who had worked most diligently in the community to provide services. They were the ones who were hurt in this process and continue to be hurt.
And now an independent report commissioned by the department itself has confirmed significant problems with the process. The report by consultants Nous Group paints a picture of a tender round that was too rushed, overly secretive and confused. The Nous report describes a newly formed department, still developing as an organisational unit, which wasn't ready to deliver such a huge and complex new tender process, but did so under the pressure of an extremely challenging government-imposed timeframe. Liberal Senator Zed Seselja admits mistakes were made by the department, he says.
Departments sometimes get it very wrong. In this case, I think there are certainly some improvements that can be made.
Although he won't say if the government got it wrong by cutting the overall funding to community groups.
No one's going to say that every decision that was taken in the 2014 budget was perfect, and we've seen subsequent events in terms of some of the challenges the government has faced.
Was this a wrong decision of the 2014 budget?
Well, look, I'm just not going to get into that. I'll let commentators, you know, make those judgments one way or another.
But Anne Campsie from Beenleigh Care and Concern has made her judgment.
The government really make me sick because they don't know. They haven't got a clue to what is happening down here. So, yeah, it's not going to get any easier for anybody.
I'm Melanie Christensen, and on Background Briefing this week, we're looking at how a city like Logan in southeast Queensland is coping with community services lost under the double whammy of a big budget cut and a disruptive new tender process.
Did you want to get out and just have a little walk around?
Yep, sounds great.
So over there we've got an Afghan grocery store. Those people there are from Serbia. And then we've got down here another store with Afghanis. And around the corner here we have Fijian Indian shop.
Logan is a sprawling city that sits between Brisbane and the Gold Coast. It's nearly 1,000 square kilometres, 64 suburbs, and one of Australia's most ethnically diverse cities. It's a popular place for arriving refugees. For the last decade or so, Logan has taken in between 800 and 1,200 refugees a year, and now boasts 217 different ethnic cultures. Deputy Mayor Russell Lutton is showing me around.
It's fantastic in the way that it offers something for everyone. It offers the diversity in housing and accommodation, that it doesn't matter what you want, you can get it in Logan.
An anonymous community worker quoted in a recent report on Logan described it as a two-part city. If you're heading down the highway from Brisbane to the Gold Coast, turn left and everyone's living a wonderful lifestyle. Or hang a right past IKEA and find yourself amongst old public housing, unemployment and poverty. Russell Lutton, though, says Logan is much more diverse than that. But the contrast is easy to find. From this...
So this is the suburb of Daisy Hill, and it's home to more expensive housing. And these places over here have million-dollar views on the other side of them. Most of them are built up, so they've got the view right out to the mountains.
And a big tennis court there, I see?
Yeah, tennis courts and swimming pools and you name it. They've got it, all mod cons.
To this.
So all these houses over the road here would have been built by the Department of Housing over the years.
So the problem has been that there are concentrations of disadvantage.
Yes, that's right. You know, some of the streets have got 50, 60% of public housing in them, and it just concentrates the disadvantage. And it's like there's no diversity in it. There's no, you know, the next door's got a job and so I aspire to get a job. It's next door's in the same boat as me and the next door to that and the next door to that, you know.
A recent analysis of social disadvantage in Australia ranked three Logan suburbs, Woodridge, Beenleigh and Eagleby, amongst the most disadvantaged urban areas in Queensland. Which is why Councillor Lutton is so concerned about the latest cuts to the city's vital community sector organisations, especially those providing emergency relief.
We are sorry, but we can no longer reply to mobile phones. We have lost funding from the federal government, so you will have to phone after 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning. Thank you. Bye.
The answering service was the first thing to go when federal funding for the Beenleigh Catholic Care and Concern Centre stopped in February.
Before, at home, I would be able to get the messages, and if it was serious, then I'd come in and see them. But since I've lost the federal funding, I've had to stop phoning mobiles because I can't afford it.
Even when Anne Campsie turns up on a Thursday morning now, the help she can offer is less than it used to be.
Where I was paying a full week's rent, because that helps people, I can't now. So I just give $100. That's the most I can give now.
Do you know the impact on them? People you've had to limit to that amount?
Yes, they cried. The vouchers, of course, are just the same as what it was before until they've gone.
And their vouchers for food?
Food, petrol. We've got Woolworths for shoes, school needs, all that sort of stuff. We get a lot of people coming into the area and they've got to have a school uniform. And of course, they have got nothing. So we help out with that as well. But we've had to stop them coming three times, which they used to be able to come three times in the year. We took it down to two because of the federal funding, and now we've got to put it down to one.
So what does that mean for the people you've been helping?
It's a very sad day, yeah.
As part of the federal government's overhaul of grants to community sector groups, funding for emergency relief was put out to competitive tender for the first time in 40 years. It was supposed to deliver more efficient, more holistic services. Anne Campsie got a letter explaining why she lost her funding, which said,
only one application can be made per region for each organisation, which means my funding, well, what I used to get, has gone to Beaudesert.
How far away is Beaudesert?
50 kilometres. The Lutheran Church used to be down at Bethania, but then they moved to Kingston, Woodridge, and the people can't get there. It costs money to get on a train, and they haven't got any. You know, what can you do? Nothing.
One of the things the federal government has said is that there hasn't been a review of emergency relief for 40 years and they wanted to review it and make it more efficient.
Well, what they've done is destroyed it. It's not emergency relief anymore. I mean, the people who come in to me are desperate. Like the lady out there, she's desperate.
And so is the next person through Anne's door.
Just underline that there and tell me how much you pay a fortnight.
That's like $380.
And how much do you get a fortnight?
At the moment, I'm nothing at the moment.
Okay, so put nil.
Nil.
Desperate and hungry.
One of my good friends told me about here, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely come here. So I came here straight away.
So you've got some help, you've got petrol and food. What kind of difference is that going to make to you?
Oh, it'll help me a lot now that I can get some food and pay for fuel, go get something for myself finally. I haven't eaten since yesterday. I've ran out of food since then. But yeah, it's been struggling.
Craig's life took an unexpected turn a couple of weeks earlier when he quit his factory job after suffering abuse at work. Not expecting to be out of work and unable to claim the dole, the bills quickly got on top of him.
Since I've left there, I've had no income.
So you're behind in the rent?
Yeah, behind everything. We've got debts going on, phone bills and, you know, loans from banks and stuff like that. Now we can't pay them back. Just struggling with all the rent and food and fuel. It's just really stressful. It's been getting to me.
And so you're looking for work? You've been trying to find another job?
Yeah, I've been trying to look for another job, but it's been pretty hard to look for a job. No one's really hiring at the moment, but I'll find one. I'm trying.
Have you been in a position like this before where you've been behind in your rent and bills and so on?
No, I haven't. It's first time. It's been real. I've never felt like this or been like this ever. No. It's different.
What is it like?
To be honest, it feels crap. It's just crap. It feels like crap.
Anne Campsie says a small amount of state funding will keep her centre open probably until July. But already the pressure is increasing on other organisations in Logan providing emergency relief.
So this is where they make up all the food parcels?
Just a little bit of...
We'll create you what we call a single person parcel. You can decide what you want. Okay, so Matthew, have we ever helped you at all?
Yeah, before.
Yeah.
15 minutes back up the Pacific Motorway at Logan Central, staff and volunteers at the Adventist Development and Relief Agency are making food parcels for those in need. ADRA manager Pam Wood says being just across from the Woodridge Railway Station means this has always been a busy emergency relief operation, but now it's sometimes overwhelmingly busy.
We've had 2,000 new clients, if you like, since July this year. The fact that we've got no other agencies around us at all now at Logan Central has made it really difficult because the needs are growing by the day and the resources have to be stretched even further than they have before. So yes, we got more money, but we got three times as much work, so you can imagine what that's like. It's very difficult.
Are there people that you have to turn away that you have to say no to?
Well, look, we don't say no to anybody for food. If we've got food, we give it to everybody who's in need. I mean, this is Australia, so we don't tend to turn anybody away. Only time we might do that is if we're out of food. That has happened in the past.
What about when they need help with bills?
Well, we are able to help most of the people with something. Sometimes we haven't got enough to be able to help them with everything, and we try and make appointments with them with other agencies. But, you know, we only have so much money to give away.
A bit further north and on the other side of the highway is the Logan East Community Neighbourhood Centre. Julie Fursey is the manager there.
Eagleby lost their community organisation for food relief, so they come up here now. That's a fair whack for them to have to drive all the way up from Eagleby to get help. Beanley lost some funding down there for emergency relief, so they have to come up here. So there's lots of people having to travel, and with the travel in Logan City, it's not great. The buses, they do their best, I guess, but you might have to get three buses to get here from Kingston, which is ridiculous.
A bigger problem for the Logan East Community Neighbourhood Centre is the loss of federal funding for its life skill course for parents.
G'day y'all. Hope you're all well. Had a good week.
On a Thursday morning, there are usually a couple of dozen people gathered to hear from social worker and psychotherapist David Rowles.
Remember I suggested doing a scale of anger and anxiety? The words you'd use to describe how the emotion you're experiencing in different levels of these things.
Mine come out as rage.
Well, some of us do. Some of us go very quickly from a bit of annoyance to rage. Whoop! Straight up.
David Rowles is dumbfounded by the federal government's decision to withdraw funding after 8 years.
I think it's immoral, seriously immoral, that funding for this course has been withdrawn. It has so much benefit in terms of child safety issues, in terms of drug usage issues, in terms of domestic violence. Domestic violence, I mean, you know, that's a huge issue in our communities. And this course relates directly. So, you know, particularly after the amount of evaluative processes that have been undertaken in the course to continue the funding previously under the previous government, the information is there. It's quite clear that it's substantially useful for many, many people.
And you're still getting referrals from child safety, from police?
Exactly, exactly. It's just a crazy thing, isn't it?
Julie Fursey says without this program, there'd be nothing similar available on the eastern side of the freeway. So she's been pulling money from wherever she can to keep the course going for now.
Our management was so disbelieving that we can lose the infrastructure that's already in place for this program. They've actually committed to fund it to the end of this year. So we've run it the last semester, the last term, and this term will be the last one we run. We're looking desperately to get something in place to keep that running.
How valuable would you say that program is?
I think it's critical to have it out there in the community. The number of people that have come through over the years who have gotten positive results for their family and themselves. It's just been phenomenal to watch.
And you've seen the results, that this has helped families stay together, it's put families back together?
It certainly has. I've seen the results and it has blown me away.
Oh. Watch this! Hurry!
Among the program's success stories is Danielle Cox. On a Wednesday afternoon, she's supervising her two sons at their Auskick footy practice.
I never thought I'd be able to do anything like this. I did it with Zach 2 years ago, the first time, and him and I bonded, you know, just like that. It was through this, I think, this sport that, you know, I kind of got a common ground with Zach. He was right into football with his dad, so this was something I could get involved in as well. And
it's a long way from where you were.
Huge, massive, absolutely, yep. Would never thought I was able to do anything like this. Very proud, driving myself, picking the kids up, coming here, interacting, you know, keeping a smile on my face, not getting, you know, because I think I've got this mark here from being, you know, scouring all the time at not handling myself and just being very stressed out, but this is easy.
After the birth of her second son, Danielle suffered depression and severe anxiety.
I was very, very unwell mentally and couldn't get out of bed for months on end, wasn't looking after myself, wasn't able to go to the shops or do anything, pay bills. So essentially I wasn't able to do anything. I wasn't even going outside, being social. I'd cut off my family, didn't have any sort of support except for my ex, Chris.
Her relationship broke down. Her ex took the boys to live with him, and Danielle was worried about how her older son was coping.
I seen that he was getting very emotional around me. You know, it's not good for the kids to see their mother in such a state where she's crying all the time, unhappy, you know, won't get out of bed and is overwhelmed by the most smallest thing. I mean, I would literally, because I shake, I used to drop my coffee, you know, and spill it and leave drops in that, and I'd just cry because I couldn't even enjoy a coffee without, you know, and just little things like that. And so I'd be very snappy, wasn't able to handle myself.
Were you worried that you were going to lose the kids altogether at this stage?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, definitely. If Chris had been very nasty, I could have lost him through the courts and it could have been a very nasty thing. The risk was always going to be there if I had have kept going downhill. If I hadn't have got up out of bed and found this program, it would have worked out a hell of a lot differently. I'm pretty sure, to tell you the truth, and I don't want to be so morbid in saying this, but I honestly think I would have given up by now.
Danielle says this program, known by the acronym KNIT, for Knowledge, Networking, Intervention, Training, taught her how to deal with her emotions.
Now I'm able to start managing myself better. I drive a car, which was something I was never able to do before. I've stopped shaking. I'm able to go out into the community and do my shopping, go to the doctors, just communicate, which is something I hadn't been able to do before.
Which means she's now achieved her most important goal. Her two footy-loving sons now live half the time with her.
Go with the little girl.
This is Background Briefing. I'm Melanie Christensen, and on the program today, we're looking at the combined impact of a budget cut for the community sector and a new tender process, officially called a new way of working for grants, and how that's affecting communities like the city of Logan in southeast Queensland.
It adds to the disadvantage. It compounds the issue. If you know that there's no help there.
The city's deputy mayor, Russell Lutton, says Logan is feeling the collective pain of cuts to many small programs and services, which is a major setback, he says, in a place like Logan, which welcomes people coming to make a new start.
A lot of people come, they may be at a very low point in their life, but then they get on their feet, they move on, move out, go to other places, but they've got on their feet here through opportunities that have been given to them. It's a great nurturer of people.
That's the kind of place that needs community sector organisations.
Most certainly. You can't do it without community and the services that they provide. Just the assistance, the advice, the guidance, everything that goes with either arriving in a new country, as many of the refugees are, or moving from interstate to start a new life.
Not that Logan is alone in this. Tessa Boyd-Kane is Deputy CEO of the Australian Council of Social Service.
ACOS heard from many hundreds of organisations across the country that lost funding, sometimes lost all of their government funding, sometimes lost funding that they absolutely relied on to deliver services in communities.
According to information supplied by the department, almost 2,000 groups who applied for this round of community sector grants were unsuccessful, and of those, more than half were funded at the time. Although since then, between April and June, the government has returned nearly 42 of the $270 million it cut after realising it had gone too far. But that's not nearly enough to undo the damage, says Tessa Boyd-Kane from ACOS.
We saw not only the shutting of doors by community organisations, but a real undermining of the social fabric, a real undermining of the collaborative capacity that helps us as a community sector provide overall support, provide flexibility and agility to the communities that we work in. What we're left with is people on low incomes and people facing poverty in a much worse off situation.
ACOS and many individual community groups gave evidence to a Senate inquiry investigating this new grants process. The inquiry began in February this year and was supposed to run for a month. but it was extended four times, taking 98 submissions and holding three public hearings before its final report in September concluded, in a majority finding, that this so-called new way was poorly planned, hurriedly implemented, and resulted in a loss of services. But in a five-page dissenting report, government senators on the inquiry comprehensively rejected that assessment as partisan and self-serving, instead pointing to the budgetary mess inherited from Labor. The inquiry's deputy chair, Liberal Senator Zed Seselja.
In the end, everything governments do has to be funded.
The dissenting report said that reforming the grants program for community sector groups was vital to the ongoing work of dealing with the legacy of debt and deficit left by the Labor government. Although Senator Seselja now won't be drawn into defending decisions taken in that 2014 budget.
No one's going to say that every decision that was taken in the 2014 budget was perfect, and you know we've seen subsequent events in terms of some of the challenges the government has faced. But what I would say is a principle of looking to get absolute best value for money is a reasonable one.
Was this a wrong decision of the 2014 budget?
Well, look, I'm just not going to get into that. I'll let commentators, you know, make those judgments one way or another. The bottom line for me is to make sure we don't see service delivery gaps.
The department has had three ministers since the 2014 budget, Kevin Andrews, then Scott Morrison, and now Christian Porter, who declined to speak to Background Briefing. Senator Seselja says it's up to the ministers who signed off on that funding cut to community sector groups to explain it.
Well, again, that's a decision that was taken by government, and it's not a decision that I take, so I'm not in the room for all of those decisions. My role as a committee member was to look at the process, to look at whether it was a reasonable process, and to look at whether or not the principle of trying to get best value out of the grants process is a good one.
But Labor Senator and Shadow Minister for Communities, Claire Moore, rejects any suggestion the funding of community sector groups should have been cut so significantly, $270 million from the four-year grants program, for the sake of the budget bottom line.
To hide behind a budget excuse for an administrative process that didn't work is not responding to the needs. And I think that's actually a shabby excuse.
Despite the reduced funding pool, this new way of working for grants was supposed to deliver community services without gaps by eliminating duplication and increasing efficiency, innovation, and collaboration among community groups. But Senator Moore says there wasn't time for that, with only 37 days' notice of the new process and tenders open for just 5 weeks.
The 5 weeks, considering the massive change to the tender process and also considering the financial restrictions in which they were working, the 5 weeks was completely inadequate. And particularly as we have so much evidence from people in the sector that they didn't get clear information, they were lost in the process.
And now that assessment has been reinforced by an independent review commissioned by the department itself. A 28-page report by consultants Nous Group tells the story of a tender round designed without the time to properly consult experts or the sector and delivered without enough timely, relevant information. As a result, Nous says community groups didn't understand what was going on and weren't ready for the change. It felt like the community perspective didn't count, according to Roger Marshall, Vice President of the Logan East Community Neighbourhood Centre.
Very depersonalised, impersonal. You had a sense of foreboding all the time that this wasn't going to end well. You got the sense it was set up to disadvantage organisations like ours. And a real sense of sadness that the work that we'd been doing and that the outcomes we'd achieved weren't counting for anything, really. You know, the work we'd done in the past didn't seem to be all that relevant to the process. And our local knowledge, neither.
Liberal Senator Zed Seselja now agrees there was a problem, not with the government, but with the department.
Departments sometimes get it very wrong. In this case, I think there are certainly some improvements that can be made because at the same time, departments and governments are asking community organisations to be as effective and efficient as possible. Obviously, departments have the same requirement. I would say, though, I would defend, though, the work of whether it's DSS or other organisations. I mean, what I see from these departments is absolutely goodwill to get the job done on behalf of the community. I see hard-working public servants doing their best, but even they would acknowledge that sometimes they get it wrong.
And in this case, there were failures.
Well, I think it's fair to say that, you know, there certainly can be improvements.
The Senate Committee's majority report also found the process had an apparent inherent bias towards larger providers at the expense of local knowledge and expertise. Although Labor's Claire Moore says even the biggest operators struggled to know what was required of them.
Even with the knowledge of how a competitive tendering round should operate, this process was so complex, so rushed, and working within an area where there's reduced funding, that even organisations such as Centrecare, such as the Salvation Army, really experienced organisers, were confused and frustrated by the way it operated.
And now the NAUS report has revealed there was also confusion and frustration inside this relatively new department. NAUS found roles and responsibilities were unclear in some areas. There wasn't always a clear central point of accountability and control. Staff didn't always know who to contact when they had a problem. And when circumstances changed, there was uncertainty about exactly what to do next. And there were technology glitches, with failed online acknowledgements and bounced email messages prompting a flood of duplicate applications. Senator Claire Moore says it was never realistic to try to introduce such a huge change so quickly.
The argument from the department that, you know, it's time to do a major change, that could well be true. But was this the time, in a budget where they just had a loss of $270 million in their operating budget for these grants, and where people were struggling to understand the new machinery of government changes about which departments had changed and where, and also when they had such an incredibly, I was going to say optimistic, but that is not the right adjective, incredibly short time frame in which to operate. Everything, all the elements were lined up to make sure that this was going to be a difficult process. And it seems to me the only group who didn't see that this was going to be a particularly difficult process were the department and the minister.
Excuse me, we have this for a change.
Back in Logan, the city is facing a new challenge.
So over here, we've got couple of local businesses.
On my tour with Deputy Mayor Russell Lutton, we meet Logan Central shopkeeper Victor Lee.
So Victor in this shop here, he's a Cambodian. Victor. Hey mate, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, good, good.
How long have you been here?
4.5 years here, 4 years over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm pretty familiar with the area, but not as much as Russell Lutton does.
Good place to do business?
Yes and no. Could be better though.
How?
There seem to be a few people that shouldn't be here, to be honest with you. But if we can do that, if we can get those people and make this place better, we'll probably attract more people here. Because we have a very good spot here, as you probably can see.
Yeah. Good location.
It's pretty good
location. But you're saying there are some trouble elements around.
Oh yeah, quite often. Let's face it, is we can do better. Yeah.
And we will.
We will, yeah.
See you, mate.
Yeah.
But just a few days after that conversation, the problem troubling Victor Lee, with young people congregating around the Woodridge train station, escalates, making the ABC News.
Police have charged three girls following a street brawl involving around 50 teenagers in Logan City, south of Brisbane, late yesterday. Francis Tappan reports.
The brawl erupted at the intersection of
Deputy Mayor Russell Lutton says when it comes to Logan, it's always the bad news that makes headlines.
We feel we've had a bad rap over the years from some sections of the media where, we quite often say anything bad happens in Logan. Anything good that happens in Logan is called south of Brisbane.
A couple of years ago, those bad headlines went global when street fighting between Indigenous and Tongan neighbours was reported as a race riot.
Last night, the feud peaked. Hey.
It was a fight, a brawl.
Police charged two men with public nuisance and obstructing police.
You let them go!
All the action was just around here. You can see they're just nice, normal housing. Nothing spectacular. And as I said, it escalated from a family feud into something that hit the world headlines.
One thing that trouble did do was bring the city together to try to change its future and its image, starting with a new branding strategy, Logan, City of Choice.
We want to be known as a city of choice where people choose to come here. And so we've been doing a lot of marketing and just trying to turn around that negative connotations that's been attached to the name Logan.
There's also a 20-year housing plan to remake the city's supply of public housing to modernise and diversify it. And there's Logan Together, a 10-year project to tackle disadvantage by focusing on kids up to the age of 8.
If you can get kids born well and then make every post a winner after that through critical life transition stages at age 1 and 3 and 5 and then through to 8, then you massively boost kids' life chances.
After 18 months of research and planning, the Logan Together project launched in July. Both federal and state governments have put funding into the backbone organisation. But Director Matthew Cox says the project rests on bringing all the community agencies involved in the welfare of children on board in a collective effort.
It requires a campaign that involves all the stakeholders who've got something to do with growing kids up well. And that's certainly a lot about the health system, it's about educators and the education system and early learning, it's about social services and service providers, but really importantly it's also about churches and sports groups and arts and cultural groups who create the conditions for good life in a community.
So it's about harnessing groups that are already working in the area, is it? You're not creating new structures.
No, absolutely. It's a collaboration framework or a collective impact framework, to use the jargon. And it's about harnessing everybody's efforts so we're pulling in the same direction.
Which is why Russell Lutton says this is a terrible time for Logan's vital community groups to lose funding, to lose staff, to have their capacity undermined by government cuts.
Look, we've got a fantastic community, but it's got the nature of the origins of the city, the public housing, the influx of refugees, and it brings with its issues, and we're happy to deal with them, and we need support from other levels of government through our community organisations. We've got wonderful not-for-profits. They are rated, you know, the best around, but when they suffer cutbacks, something drops out, and it's that this little sector of the community drops out, then that little sector drops out, and it all just adds up.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research, Anna Whitfeld. Technical production, Andrei Shabanov. The executive producer is Wendy Carlisle. You can listen to Background Briefing again anytime online. I'm Melanie Christensen. Bye for now.